Hey, what's up, everybody, and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, live edition. We are here on a Thursday afternoon, the very end of April. We begin a new month, May flowers, so we hope, before the June showers come. And I am your co-host, Vlad Sedler. Jason Anthony is traveling, Mr. Booms, and so with me is another wonderful colleague. Everybody knows him as Bronx Yankees 23 on Twitter X, Mike Mager. Mike, how are you?
Good, bud. Doing well. Fun to be potting with you again. It's been a crazy season so far. Lots of challenges for us fantasy managers.
It's been rough. For some fan bases as well. Other fan bases are getting a nice little pleasant surprise. But again, we're only about 20% here into the season. There's so much more of it to go. Teams have played about 30 games here. We're kind of past the super small sample size range into like just small sample size range. But one thing that I know you're a Yankees guy, and the Yankees are, I think they'll be fine. But the other team there in New York, man, they're struggling. This is a team that I actually thought was going to win the World Series. I thought with Freddie Peralta and Bichette and all these good vibes, like, you know, good things will happen. And of course, my boy Luis Robert Jr., with his back injury, doing his thing, he, you know, brought his vibes over from the White Sox. Hopefully, he'll be okay. But the team's just it's an absolute mess. As we're here, live, I'm seeing Devin Williams come in a non-save-op situation. I'm worried about what might happen there. But what the heck is going on with the Mets, worst team in baseball?
Yeah, no, it's really bad and unexpected. The pitching has really let them down. I mean, Senga is unusable and now hurt. Peterson's been a complete disaster, right? I actually had some high hopes for him going into the season, had a number of shares. Devin Williams has struggled. It's been rough. And a lot of the hitters have not shown up. And, you know, then, of course, you know, you got two big injuries. You have Soto missing time. And as soon as he gets back, Lindor goes down. And, you know, they don't have many great bats in that lineup. And to lose the two best bats is a real challenge for them now.
I mean, you've got MJ Melendez. He's hitting third. He's actually producing for them. They've got Mark Vientos hitting cleanup. They signed Jorge Polanco to play first base, and Vientos was supposed to be an outsider. Added Marcus Semien. He's been playing every day, but he's aging quickly. He's struggling. I mean, it's gotten so bad that over the last few days, they've picked up short side platoon master, I wouldn't call him a master per se, Austin Slater. They added Eric Wagaman, who has got lots of positions of multi-eligibility, but nobody wants. And then they just claimed Andy Ibañez off waivers, who obviously would have been much nicer there as a short side platoon guy for the A's, but Colby Thomas is up and Daryl Harnais is doing well. So this is the team. It just doesn't look the same.
No, this is a big money team in a very big market. And now they're shopping in the bargain bin, trying to fill in holes. And I think this is about as upset and angry as I've ever seen the Mets fan base. And you know, there's already been two managerial firings in April. And I'm wondering if the Mets are going to be number three. We'll see.
Yeah.
Getting swept at home by Colorado is never a good sign.
No, it's not good. I will say, I mean, there are parts of the pitching that is promising. Obviously, Clay Holmes is having a nice season. Nolan McClain is as good as advertised. Freddie Peralta has been solid. And then, obviously, Kode Senga with the lumbar spine injury, hitting the IL. But Christian Scott also, I actually started to think he was a bit of a sneaky ad. I didn't expect Senga to hit the IL. But, I wouldn't be surprised. He hasn't been all that great in the majors, but I wouldn't be surprised if he, kind of stepped up a little bit.
Yeah, no, I think people had high expectations for him. And he got his first start this year and laid a big egg with a lot of walks. But it looks like with Senga's injury, he's going to get a second chance in the rotation. So, hopefully that was just nerves and we can see more of his stuff come out in his next couple of starts.
And then on the flip side of things, the Washington Nationals. So we know the Braves, they've been the best team in baseball. They've scored the most runs. Most of their guys are crushing it. The pitching looks good. Looks like they have a surplus. They have a problem, you know, even you know, who's going to be in the rotation. Everyone's just so good. And but the Washington Nationals are incredibly surprising. Second in runs scored. And they're doing it, by the way, I just checked on Fangraphs. The worst pitching staff, you know, bullpen and rotation in baseball. They have, you know, negative minus one plus WAR, the worst in baseball. Their ace, Cade Cavalli, sure, he strikes out a lot of guys, but I know Joe, our boy Joe Arrico loves him, but he's not very consistent. They got guys like Miles Mikolas in the rotation. Foster Griffin's really kind of been the ace there for now. But what do you explain here? How can you explain this sudden surge beyond just James Wood and CJ Abrams crushing it?
Well, just put it in perspective. They do have a losing record, but they've been much more exciting than expected. Yeah, the lineup has been surprisingly strong. CJ Abrams is off to a great start. James Wood as well. They have a lot of guys who are getting big hits for them. It seems like every time I turn on the game, they're at 6, 7, 8 runs. So they're pretty dangerous right now. Nassim Nunez stealing bases like crazy. I'm kind of skeptical that this team is really going to compete for the playoffs over the course of the long run, but they're an exciting team to watch, at least offensively. And with their pitching, the other team scoring a lot of runs too. So they have some pretty high scoring games.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, CJ Abrams, for example, like I remember, and you and I may have been in a similar position, but I was in a big draft where he wasn't a target for me. I wanted nothing really to do with him, but I was one pick away from getting him like way past the max. And I was like, you know what, this is a great spot for him. He's perfect fit. I need some stolen bases. Let me grab him here. I obviously wasn't expecting this type of start, but I mean, he's a pretty good hitter. You know, he's got the barrel rate up over 10% for the first time in his career. It's close to 12% now. He's hitting 286. His expected average is around 282. Of course, that's, you know, what has been, not what's going to be. And even the BABIP, it's pretty close to the average. It's not inflated. It's not like 350 plus. It's around 295. He's at 7 home runs, 5 stolen bases now. Where would you see that ending up? What do you think he'll end up with home runs and steals?
Yeah, I'm not sure he's going to be that much more than like a 20 home run hitter. That's where he seems to gravitate towards. I could certainly see the stolen bases rising. He seems to be striking out less and getting on base more. Again, I don't know if he'll keep it up, but if he's a 20, 25 player with a 50 plus batting average, that's extremely valuable and very profitable for where he was going. He did seem to slip there. I'm in the same boat as you. I remember one large draft I was in particular where he wasn't a target. He probably should have been, but he wasn't. But he fell, and I was gearing up to take him, and he went like either one or two picks before me. And boy, that really hurts now.
Yep. Yeah, it does. Quick question here. Joe G is asking, speaking of the Mets, do I stay with Alvarez in a 12-teamer or do I add Pedro Páez or Austin Wells?
I'm not the hugest Alvarez guy, but compared to the other choices, I would stick with him. I think he's got more upside, and he's going to be hitting probably in the middle of that lineup and playing pretty regularly.
Yeah, Alvarez for me as well. I think as long as he's healthy, he's going to end up as a top 10 catcher. I think he's in a slump right now. Remember early in the season, he was crushing it. He was doing it from the 7th, 8th spot in the lineup. Now he's moved up out of necessity, but you know, somebody like Páez is, you know, just a little Páez. I know Andy Páez goes by Páez. Páez is a bit of a flash in the pan. And Austin Wells, man, he's a really streaky guy. You obviously know him well. You just know he'll somehow get his 20 home runs. You just don't know when it's going to come. You want to see like some pulse, right? You want to see him like in there. He's starting to barrel the ball, getting hits. And then, you know, things like that. But for the most part, I think I would hold on Alvarez. He'll break through the slump soon.
Yeah, I mean, Wells isn't a terrible second catcher in a deep league because he does have some pop, and being on the Yankees, he'll get the runs and ribbies, but it's going to come with a really weak batting average. And yeah, Páez or Pages, you know, I think Herrera's catching more. And I'm not that impressed with the bat.
Yeah. And so talking a little bit about this past weekend in Fab, and it was a monster week. There was a lot of spend. I forgot what the average spend was, close to 100 or something like that on average per team in the main event. And the big pickups were Peyton Toll and J.R. Richie. And obviously Toll was, he was available, I think, in 60 or 70% of leagues and a lot more than that in 12 teamers. He had that 11 strikeout outing. And then, of course, velocity was down in his last start. They're talking about how maybe it was, you know, kind of overworked in that previous start. And it's always funny, like the dip after, you know, the big pull, right? Like they feel like sometimes they pull you in. He kind of felt like a can't miss. Everything seemed to work with like, oh, Brian Bayo is horrendous. He's got to get pulled from that rotation. He's got a 6 ERA. Oh, now Gregor Crochet is hurt. Like, you know, Sonny's Gray's coming back. He'll take his spot. But there's like room for him. So there's him, and he went for well over 200. And then J.R. Richie went for almost 200. Actually, that caught me by surprise. I did draft him in my main event in Vegas. I got him in the 29th round. I've held him all this time. I am a big fan of his. I did not expect the prices to go that high. So, you know, what are your expectations for those two? And with, you know, with Toll, do you think he sticks in the rotation for the rest of the season? And Richie, like where did that price come from?
Yeah, Toll, I did not get any in Fab. I did have some, for me, fairly aggressive bids, but I wasn't all that close except for one league where I was fairly close. But that surprised me a little bit that he was consistently over 300. I was thinking more in the 200s, but I really like him. I think he's one of the best prospect pitchers we're going to see this year. Him and Snelling, I think, to me, were the two most appealing young arms likely to be called up. I think his stuff is great. I think he's going to be in that rotation. I mean, either injury or I don't know how Boston can keep rolling out Bello. If it's a choice between him and Toll, it seems pretty easy to me that Toll should remain in. So the bids were a little higher than I was comfortable going, but I think I can't say anything negative about the player. I think he's going to be very good. Richie, I think of as, you know, maybe a little tier below. And I was very surprised at the bids, honestly. I think he's going to be a solid pitcher, but we haven't seen much of him at this level. I don't think he has a lot of pitches, but he doesn't really have the strikeout stuff that blows you away. Obviously it's a very good team and it looks like, you know, he should have some run. But I was, you know, I was kind of expecting low 100s, not, you know, aggressively into the 200s in a lot of places. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's, people need pitching, including myself, honestly, but there's a lot of aggressive bidding going on right now for any arms that, you know, look appealing.
Yeah, and the Braves rotation, it's interesting. So Bryce Elder pitched another gem. He didn't get the win. I believe it was, I forgot who, but somebody gave up Piamps, I think. Joel Piamps gave up a couple of runs. And then later on in the game, Jose Suarez, I believe, gave up a couple of runs as well. So, but, you know, Elder continues to impress. Martin Perez has been serviceable. You do have Spencer Strider coming back. You've got Grant Holmes is, you know, as Jason said last week, and in injury walking, it's just a matter of, if and not when, but not if. And then, Didier Fuentes is remaining with the team for now in a multi-inning capacity. And then they moved Ronaldo Lopez there too. So after the last start where he got blown up for four runs in an inning and was pulled from the game, Ronaldo Lopez, they said, Walt Weiss said he was going to move him into a relief role and to work on his mechanics. And so he appeared in Monday's contest Wednesday's and pitched the final two innings and pitched well. The interesting thing was the velocity from what I saw remained the same, which is still below previous levels. But, you know, what do you see in like Ronaldo's future? Like, is this like a good place for him? Like, imagine if your rotation's healthy and you've got Didier Fuentes along with Ronaldo Lopez in that bullpen with like Dylan Lee when he comes back. I think he's on a leave of some sort, with a healthy Raisel Iglesias and Robert Suarez. With that rotation, with that hitting, this looks like a true competitor for the Dodgers and any of the other top teams, like possibly the best team in the game.
Yeah, no, I think they are. And you know, at some point they get scrolling back in the second half as well. There's a lot of races are very tight. Other than the Braves, the Yankees have the biggest lead in the standings at just a game and a half. So the other five divisions are tight. The Braves, I guess at the moment, or going into today, had a 7-game lead. And with the Phillies and Mets struggling so badly, they may grow that lead. And so I think at some point they could, you know, they might be also kind of thinking short-term plus long-term in terms of when to use these innings, when to use up, you know, Fuentes innings. I think Richie is going to get some run. He's a top pitching prospect for them. And I think they want to see what they have. And he's looked pretty good. I think his first start was better than his second. But I think he has some staying power. I guess with him, though, you know, if he does not pitch well, they do have other options. And so I don't think, you know, people should feel like he's going to definitely be in the rotation for the rest of the year. I think he's going to have to kind of earn his place to stay in that rotation. Ronaldo Lopez, I don't know. I don't see him as a long-term starter, but he has that capability. And, you know, honestly, they could just keep rolling out Martin Perez if they want to. I mean, under the hood, as they say, is not particularly pretty. Everyone kind of looks down on Martin Perez, maybe with some good reason, but he, you know, right now he's got a 2.2 ERA and a 1 whip in 6 games. So he's getting the job done, certainly. I think Richie could work out for folks, but I think there is still remaining a risk that if he doesn't pitch well, they have other options.
Yeah, and so J.R. Richie's next start, it comes next Monday, this upcoming Monday, and it'll be in his neck of the woods, his hometown in Seattle. So he'll go up against the Braves, and then the following weekend, basically a 2-start week, he will go to L.A. to face the Dodgers. So that'll be fun. And in general, I mean, like with fantasy, like it's a long game, right? Like it's all about like you want to catch the wave and ride it, in the beginning, as far as like even with pickups, right? Like how many times do we see, especially if you play 12 teamers, how long it takes for the market to sort of figure out, hey, this is for real. Like we need to pick up this, you know, this guy now, and he'll still be sitting there 2 weeks later. And now after he's done something, he goes for a whole lot more, or you have some of that, like that lineup matchup trickery. So like the Carlos Cortez was the guy that I wanted to bring up, because 2 weeks ago, he was a kind of the sneaky pickup in 15 teamers. We saw his barrel rate up. He's producing, he's doing well. He's got a spot in that lineup. This is before Brent Rooker came back from the IL. And that week when we picked him up, when he was facing 6 of 7 righties, he's a left-handed hitter. That week he did nothing. The following week, where many teams had dropped him, Carlos Cortez went off. He was like the AL player of the week and whatnot, and you know, 3 home runs and looked really, really good. And then you look ahead to this week, they were lined up to face four lefties. So you're like, okay, he's probably not going to play too much. But some of our rosters, our 15 teamers, have room for a guy like that. Like, okay, I need a hitter that I think, you know, it's going to be great in the summer, you know, in the park there at Sutter. And, but I'm not going to use him this week. And so I'm not going to start him this week, but you know, there's a lot of things to take advantage of that, like seeing the schedule and kind of like riding the wave, you know, starting to catch the wave before it takes off, before you, you know, it crashes on you, so to speak.
Yeah. And you use a good example because, Cortez was probably one of the toughest decisions that we had this past week in Fab. Mark Winoker and I had him on one of our auction championship teams that we shared together, and we picked up Cortez either a week or two, you know, a couple of weeks ago, and we got the great week, and it was fantastic. But on this team, we have several injuries and a couple of stashes, and so we don't have the roster flexibility. And we were debating what to do with him, and we ultimately had him on a very short string to drop him for Nathan Church, who I think will get a little more regular playing time. I think the concerns we had with Cortez was, you know, he's a platoon back facing a bunch of lefties coming up, and Brent Merkel was just coming back. So what does that do to his playing time? And you know, if you figure Rooker is the DH and you got Soderstrom and Butler in the corners, you know, I took a look. Cortez had not played in center field in the majors and hardly at all in the minors, and I just we just decided if we could get Church at a decently low price. It was under 30 that we would make that swap, and we got Church. So we made that move, but honestly, that could easily come back to bite us if Cortez. I mean, we like Cortez as a hitter, and believe me, if we had more room for him, we would certainly not have dropped him. But that drop could hurt.
Let me ask you this: so we were just talking about the Braves, Austin Riley. Had an incredible spring training. It's the Austin Riley that we've known and loved when he was healthy. I mean, he hit .357, a .450 on base percentage. He was mashing home runs. He had a 27% barrel rate. You know, it's only 51 plate appearances, but nevertheless, and he was a bit of a riser. We loved him, and he's been struggling. He's been mightily cold. He's got a bunch of runs batted in because you're just on that team in that lineup spot. That's what happens. But he's hitting under .200. Had another bad day here today as we record on this Thursday, barrel rates at 8%. And there's a similarity there with Matt McLean, who was, we know is skillful and had a red hot, he was the hottest guy in baseball in spring training. And then crickets, right? It's just been bad. Every time you see 9 runs scored by the Reds, oh, wow, he's 0 for, you know, 3 with a walk and a stolen base maybe, but it's been bad. So with Riley, obviously, we're not dropping him, but I've seen some like, oh, is it time to get off the, you know, the McLean train? And, you know, and I'm a McLaniac. I do like him. But like, kind of, I mean, what's the correlation there? Like, why would something like that happen where a guy's just red hot and then cools off? Is it just, I mean, what could it be?
Well, I mean, to some extent, players go through, you know, streaks and slumps every season, virtually every player. And, you know, I think it's important to bear in mind that they're much more noticeable now. You know, like if someone has a really cold 2-3 weeks in April, it's very noticeable. You see it in their season stats. Whereas if they're having a strong year and they have a rough end to July, it's not nearly as noticeable. Mm-hmm. I liked Riley coming into the season. I only got one big share. I'm concerned, but not panicking by any means. I mean, just looking at his numbers now, he's at a career best strikeout rate. He's at a career best walk rate. The hard hit rate is down from the last couple of years, but it's still, you know, well into the 40% area. And after having 5 consecutive seasons with a BABIP over 310, his BABIP is currently 238.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's kind of telling me that he's getting a little unlucky. He seems to be hitting a few more ground balls or a few less fly balls. Definitely leaves a lot to be desired in terms of his performance, but I don't think you panic yet. Especially when, you know, I mean, yeah, he did have some struggles the last 2 years, but he also battled injuries. And before that, he had, you know, 3 fantastic years where he provided fantasy managers with, you know, 33 to 38 home runs, always over 90 RBIs, always hitting above 270. He's still a young guy. I think if his health stays, I think the performance will come around. McLean's a tougher situation, I think. I don't think he has the track record. The hard hit is down significantly this year, it looks like. You know, his BABIP is the same as last year, and last year was not too good. I mean, he's running. Cincinnati is showing faith in him, keeping him at the number 2 spot despite the struggles. You know, he certainly had a very good, encouraging rookie year, but during that year, he had a 385 BABIP, so he was probably a little lucky to the upside and maybe set expectations too high for when he returned from missing a year. But yeah, I'd be a little more nervous with McLean, but I still think he has time to turn around. And I don't know what people expected for an average. I didn't expect a high average, but yeah, you'd like to see power with speed. And I think you'll get the speed. I'm not so sure folks will be happy with the final power numbers.
Yeah, it's funny to think back in the preseason when the Braves, where there was this overreaction of, Schwellenbach's down, Waldrop's out, Profar, oh man, they're screwed, they're in big trouble. But somehow, you know, it's working out. And even like that's the phase here with the Mets. Like at some point, these guys all come back, they'll be healthy, and the roster is fine, right? Like Bo Bichette needs some time to adjust to the new team. A lot of these guys do. So like, I think the Mets are, I would say, I don't think they're out of the playoffs altogether, despite their record now, because you just know they're going to go on some hot stretch this summer. It's like, you know, the miracle Mets stuff. And, you know, but we've seen this before, right? The Braves from a couple of years ago, where just the whole team was snake bit with injuries. And sometimes it's just, you get in a deep hole and it's just hard to climb out of.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, from what I've seen, I'm not a real fan of their manager. So I'm not, I got some doubts whether this team is going to bounce back or not.
I don't think he watches the show. I think you can lay it out straight about Mendoza. Yeah, just in case.
On a live podcast. But I think Met fans have a reason to be concerned. But there is still a scenario where they get guys back, they start hitting again, you know, maybe, you know, Christian Scott shows us what he can really do. They, you know, Jonah Tong keeps developing, gets a call up, and, you know, they need to get the bullpen right. They need Devin Williams and Luke Weaver both pitching well. So I do think they have some hurdles and they have some holes. I didn't particularly like the Nimmo for Semien trade, and I think that's going to hurt them. Vientos is not developing. You know, they said they wanted to emphasize defense, and then they, you know, signed Polanco to play first base. You know, yeah. I disagreed with the decision not to bring Alonso back on that team. So I do think they have some issues, honestly.
Let me ask you this. Jared Jones, he's back in our lives, back on the radar, and he's 25% rostered in main events. Those are mostly teams that are holding him. I don't know if you're going to be able to go to a league and find him sitting there. And then in 12 teamers, like, unless you have like an IL, I mean, if you have an IL spot, you probably already have him stashed. I don't think he's just sitting there out in the waiver. So I don't think there's much to do. But for those 75% of main events and then probably lots of OCs, you know, he's coming back soon. I mean, it's supposed to be end of the month, we're about to start May. So, you know, 3, 4, 5 rehab starts, and if no setbacks, he'll be back at the end of May. And we know he's a fireballer. He's throwing 100, throwing 101. And so the hype train is off. It's on the rails. But does something like seeing, I know it's not exactly the same, but like seeing the Justin Steele setback, isn't that sometimes like a sign that maybe, you know, there's a correlation with like there's you only get one or two big fab swings in the year. You have $1,000 budget in NFBC, and you can't just go 300 every week on, you know, or every 3 weeks on the Tolly or a toll or whoever it is. At some point, Jared Jones is going to be there, but he throws so hard, and that's obviously not a good thing for the long run, right? Just not natural and everything. But where do you stand on him? Say everything looks good for him in a few weeks. You really need pitching. You know he's going to be a competitive bid. Do you take a big swing if you have, say, 750 left?
Yeah, it's really team dependent. And so, I'll just give my philosophy. I have found over the years that not enough of the high-priced fab pickups, whether it's very young pitchers or the next great thing, have paid off. I think the hit rate is not great. I mean, obviously, there are exceptions, and, you know, God knows Nick Kurtz paid off for everyone who bought him last year. And there's certainly exceptions. So, there's a couple of things. I mean, you're putting a lot of money into one player, and you only have so many shots, as you say. I mean, it's $1,000 budget for the whole season. It doesn't replenish, and once you spend it, it's gone. And so there's the cost of acquiring them, and you also have to ask yourself, well, if he's going to cost $300, let's say. Am I better off spending $300 on him or 10 extra $30 pickups or 6 extra $50 pickups? And so sometimes I find myself resistant to making those really big purchases on guys without any type of major league track record. I look at Jared Jones a little differently. He does have some major league experience. We know that when he's healthy, he is, I think, an above average starting pitcher. Yes, he throws hard. He's obviously has an injury risk until he gets back and afterwards, but he had the surgery. So if he makes it through the entire rehab process and is throwing rehab games and is fine. And I just think I saw he hit 100 in his last rehab start. If he makes it through the entire buildup process healthy, I'm not sure he has any bigger injury risk than any other healthy starting pitcher. So I think he is, coming a month later, but in terms of skills, at least as appealing as Toll. I will tell you, I was able to stash him on one team where he was dropped. I picked him up cheap. That strategy doesn't always work. I also picked up a couple of shares of Justin Steele, and those shares will be saying goodbye to my rosters on Sunday. So sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. I have a weakness for stashes. I go into these 15-team player pools in Fab, and the pitching is so ugly. And then I look at, this hurt pitcher who is so much better. And I can talk myself into stashes easier than I would like at times. But getting back to your point, I think if he makes it through the rehab process healthy, gets activated late May, assumes his role in the Pirates rotation, he's going to be a very big fab pickup, high 200s, 300s, probably medium bid. The only reason he might be less than Toll is because people will have less money to spend.
Yep. By the way, Bubba Chandler, you know, is shaking in his boots because a month from now, what do they do? Like, say he doesn't curtail the walks. Like, I mean, he's got a, 20 walks and 29 innings. It's a 15.5% rate. It's bad. He's costing them for sure. Mitch Keller, no matter how much he is mediocre, below average, he's always healthy. He's always there. They just know he's a, hired gun, just will get him through six innings. And then, Carmen, Mazowski, Mazinski.
Okay.
He's had a rough go. He'll be fine. I mean, Braxton Ashcraft just had like one bad start recently and was coming off, I think, I don't know if it was bereavement or something, but it's a pretty solid rotation. I mean, you had Jared Jones here. He's like one of the homies too. Like, Skeens is boy. Like he'll be good. I think he's going to go for a lot if he stays healthy. And yeah, 75% of leagues, he's going to be a massive, massive target. And then you've got Brandon Woodruff. Velocity was down. So we'll see what happens. He was pulled early in his start here on Thursday.
He's down a lot. From what I have him on a couple of teams, so it's not been fun today. But he was down like 5, 6, 7 miles an hour. So that's It's not like down a mile or two. He was down a lot. I did see a report saying he doesn't feel any pain, was just flat today. But I don't know. If you're down that much, that's not a good sign.
Yeah. And, the Milwaukee Brewers, I mean, they're obviously getting it all from Jacob Mazurowski, Kyle Harrison with the big outing last time, double-digit strikeouts. Chet Patrick just continues to throw gems. But I don't think everyone's healthy. Everyone in the rotation, like, he's kind of on the outside looking in. But he's been good. And then Brandon Sproat, unfortunately, continues to disappoint. I don't know. Logan Henderson. So he is drafted in most, I think, in he's up to 77% in the main event. But Henderson, my one concern with him for a while there is they've really been babying him in the minors. He was throwing three innings at a time, like per start. But he's up to five. His ERA is way low. I mean, I love the guy. I think he's a great pitcher. Yeah. So I think he's somebody that I think has staying power. I think as long as he's healthy, he's a gem. So I'm going to look for him in leagues where he's available and try to add him.
Well, yeah. If Woodruff goes on the IL, which I'm assuming is a likely scenario here, I'd have to think Henderson's next man up, and he's going to get some runway. And I think he's probably, at least equally skilled, if not more, than Sproat and Chad Patrick. And so if he pitches as well as he has in prior stints, he could stick. But I do think they are very cautious with him. He might be an above average injury risk, but I'd have to go back and look at his history.
Yes. Yeah. I believe he is. Real quick, we got to touch on closers, right? I know it's Dan Thompson's realm, but you, Red Fox Roto, you wrote an excellent article, kind of breaking down the whole landscape. I'm covering it, for the most part in some of my stuff that I write. But I picked up a lot of Jack Perkins and Jacob Latz last week. I think I even grabbed the Senzatella, which goes against my no Rockies relievers rule, especially considering he's not even locked down to be the reliever. But, Senzatella has been impressive. Velocity way up. He's probably best used as a multi-inning guy. Either way, it was the first time I was into a Rocky. The A's, it could be tricky. The problem is Joel Kunal has already started to regress. So after, you see a zero ERA on a guy who's had one full season in the majors in the last 5 years, all of a sudden he's like your A's closer. Well, from our experience, like, this just can't be. There's it's just not going to happen. And of course, time has told us over the last few starts, he's starting to give it up. He's not getting the high leverage spots as much. Mark Leiter Jr. grabbed the last save. That's too good to be true. But I like Jack Perkins a lot. I do like Jack Perkins. I just don't know. I picked him up without even knowing, is he going to be, probably not going to be the closer like all season, right? Because he's another one of those guys, very valuable in a multi-inning role, which could come you know, at any time within the game.
Yeah, and I think that's, it kind of highlights one of the differences between baseball and fantasy baseball, because for us, the closer is so valuable, you know, the ninth inning guy. But I think, you know, for certain teams like with Perkins, the A's might find him more valuable in a multi-inning role, and which is, you know, means he'll get the occasional save and maybe he'll pitch, you know, the seventh, eighth, and ninth, or just eighth and ninth in some games, but then he's not going to be able to go back to back. And but that doesn't mean it's, he can't be a valuable fantasy asset for you. I think that pickup is looking pretty good. I wish I had jumped in on him. This past week, I got a lot of Luke Weaver shares, just as a kind of a bet against Devin Williams, who I do have on a couple of teams. And so I've hedged him on those teams and added Weaver on several others, just in case, because I don't think Devin Williams looks right. But, you know, it could be just a rough week and he could snap back into it. And Weaver, you know, is no guaranteed star either. But yeah, no, it's been very tough. I mean, I said in my article, I think this has been the most challenging fantasy baseball season ever that I can recall in terms of closers, because you've had so many key closers go down with injuries, so many closers who have just honestly been terrible, and who have lost their jobs, and then teams looking, you know, going by committee. It's, you know, Dan Thompson's been extremely busy. He's got his hands full trying to keep track of all that stuff. No, it's really challenging. Every, you know, it seems like every week I'm trying to plug a lost closer in on some team or hunting for saves in others. And, you know, the one thing I think you have to watch out for is, you know, sometimes you want to get that extra closer spec, but it's, you know, it's dangerous to be dropping healthy starting pitchers for a closer spec, because when you need those, then you lose another starter and all of a sudden you have too few, and they're really tough to find good quality starting pitching on the waiver wire. So it's a rough balance, but yeah, it's very tough. Or you can just decide to, you know, spend $200-$300 on the latest closer of the week. And that hasn't worked out particularly well in most cases.
It's just been this like revolving door. By the way, the like business, the world, you know, everything, like markets tanking, the world, but the closer analysis business, that's on the up and up, man. If you're a closer guy, business is booming.
Yeah, all we had to do is just wait on closers and draft Paul Sewald and O'Brien, and we'd be all set on the team.
Yep. And it was funny. So I was just, while you were saying that, I was looking at, because I picked up some Jacob Latz, who he's been excellent, right? Like he was supposed to make the rotation, even thinking he made one start and then move to the pen, and slowly moving his way up from, you know, a couple innings in the, you know, after the starter, like a bridge guy, all of a sudden he's up in the, you know, it's him and Jacob Junis. If you look at roster resource, they're the two guys. You got the lefty and Latz, the righty and Junis. You know, Junis isn't a prototypical closer, doesn't have the best stuff. So I'm thinking, like, you know, on Sunday, I'm like, yeah, let me get in some Lats. I raised the average, you know, the bid ranges too in the article. And then I got some shares, and I think he got a save the other day. I wonder if he can, you know, actually secure the role as a lefty. I know, you know, Skip Schumacher in the beginning of the year wanted to go with the lefty-righty committee of Robert Garcia and Chris Martin. That's obviously been, you know, so long ago. I think both are on the IL. So now you got Junis and Latz. I wonder if Latz can step up. But I will say, so in anything good, you got to always like really dig into the true picture. And so I'm looking at Jacob Latz. I'm not trying to jinx anything, but a guy with, you know, 16, almost 17 innings, 13 appearances. He's got a 1.08 ERA, super low walk rates, like at 5%. That looks good. Now I'm looking at the strikeout rate. Okay, it's a little below for what a closer is. It's a little, you know, right under 24%. Swinging strike rate, it's only 10%. Let me see. his velocity should go up when you're a reliever, right? It's actually down, his fastball velocity. Then I'm looking at a one ERA, comparing it to a XFIP Sierra that's closer to four. And then I see a 0.098 BABIP. So I don't know. That kind of scares me.
Yeah, no, I think he's a good pitcher, not a great pitcher. I think, and he's certainly not as good as his surface stats indicate. Same probably could be said with Junis. I mean, Junis doesn't have strikeout stuff either, although Junis has done historically a good job limiting hard contact. So neither one of them really has closer stuff, but the fact is you look at that roster and no one does. So, they're the best of the lot. And managers tend to ride the hot hand, although as someone who picked up Junis on two teams a couple of weeks back, he had the hot hand with three saves in a week and hasn't gotten a chance since, I think. So you just never know. Given the fact that he's a lefty, I don't know that he's going to become the full-time closer. Although, if Junis has a poor week or two, they might not have any choice. I mean, that's just what they have. They're trying to compete without a traditional closer. Although, again, like Perkins, I think the manager also sometimes sees value in being able to use lats for more than one inning, which makes it tough for him to get every save.
It's really funny how years ago in NFBC, these closer specs, you grab them a week ahead of time, you get them for less than $4. Now for closer specs, guys that aren't even closing, it's just a testament to the market here, how bad it is. Guys like Lats, Perkins, and Sensatella are going for like 20 to 40 on average. It's wild.
That's what it takes. It seems like everyone needs saves, or there's multiple teams in every league looking for saves every week. And, it's no secret who the better specs are. So there's going to be competition for them.
Let's wrap up our discussion here next year, 10, 15 minutes on. It's an article I wrote. There's some conversation around it. It's about just looking at power metrics and how we can use it from a productive point of view, get some predictive power, right? We all need power. We know who the big, big dogs are. It's, Tony Judge, O'Neill Cruz, like these guys, they hit the ball hard. The article basically talked about, the things that we probably all look at, but I'm looking at barrel rate. I'm looking at hard hit rate. I'm looking at average exit velocity. I don't look at max as much. That's just me personally. I like to see isolated power, how much of these are going for extra base hits. So I'm looking at all that, and then I put an article together. We sorted by barrel rate and just kind of digging into these guys. And one of my first takeaways was, my personal outlook on a couple of guys like James Wood and Nick Kurtz, who were third round, second round targets, but they had like their flaws, right? They were guys that we know they have massive power. Going to hit a lot of home runs, but they could be streaky. They're 30% strikeout guys. Wood laid the majors in it last year. And so there's a little bit of risk with that. And how you treat those guys. Like, are we, if Wood just has like an all-timer Cal Raleigh type season, are we going to be like, oh, we got to ignore, those downswings and average and just really, just get who gets the ball hard. But like, how do we adjust based on things that happen during the season and, to make sure also that we don't, overreact to just one season sample size of something.
It's tough. I'll confess, these are the types of profiles I tend to rank lower than maybe others. I do like, when I'm looking at an early draft pick in a snake draft or a high dollar buy in an auction, I want the power and the average. And I just think it's really tough in a snake draft when average is so tough to find, to be passing on guys with high average and taking, a lower average guy early and in the hopes that you're going to build it back up later in the draft, which is challenging to do. And once you get past the first 10 rounds, that the the plus average guys you can truly count on, you could probably count on one hand. So, you know, I look at some of these guys with 30% strikeout rates and I tend to discount them. And I think I probably discount them too much. I mean, I'm looking at Murakami, who's killing it, and I have no shares. And right now I would happily trade his strikeout rate and average to get his power on a bunch of teams. So I don't know. I think maybe sometimes I'm so hyper-focused on identifying flaws that I'm maybe not giving enough weight to what could go right and those trade-offs. But yeah, I think Wood is really impressive so far. I mean, in particular, he's just off to a great start, better than I certainly expected. But again, I think also, you know, can they do it for 6 months? I mean, it's hard to imagine that other teams aren't going to adjust to this, and can they adjust back? And I, you know, you mentioned O'Neill Cruz, who's killing it now. He was also really good the first half of last year. And then he, you know, his average tanked, his power went with it. And, you know, he still had, I don't know, I want to say like maybe 20 homers and high 30s, 38 stolen bases, if I'm remembering correctly, but came with a 200 average. And so, I guess that's the worst case scenario. But again, if you know, these guys are all still young and can improve, and to the extent they improve and cut down on the strikeout rate and or hit more fly balls, you know, the sky's the limit with some of them.
Yeah, I think there's also some value in zigging when you see the market zagging, right? Like, even that, I don't know, you probably didn't see it, but that like Mr. Beast, like red, blue question button, where you, if you hit the wrong one, anyways, it's just, it's funny. The majority got it wrong and basically would have like, you know, disintegrated the universe, and all they had to do was actually read for a second and realize you had to press one button, not the other. That would have saved everyone. Anyways, just, it's just a nice little mind trick, but just got to go against like where you see everybody, not automatically, it needs to be, like a discipline, like, you know, process a decision, but just, I'm thinking back to like Murakami, where everybody's like, oh, look at this one, you know, thing. Oh, he can't hit, what was it, anything over 95 in Japan, whatever, right? And that tanked his price. So this is a guy that was going at 160. All of a sudden he's going at 230. Like the train just went down and that's it, right? Like, but you know, that profile, it's all the projection systems still had him for 30 plus home runs. You were expecting not a high average anyways. So, you know, if it fits your roster construction, you don't already have like a Wood or O'Neill Cruz or whatever, like he's a perfect fit. So, you know, really be careful to what the market is saying and doing and find places to deviate from that, because I find that to be a real big advantage. I think that was the case with Jordan Walker this year too. I have two main events. He's on both my teams and his price kept dropping, and it was based on spring training. And it was also based on bias of, you know, oh, I'm not buying this driveline. Ah, he's screwed us before. It's, you know, having a bad spring. And I'm not comparing him to like a Sal Stewart, like, but the Sal Stewart just, you know, it just like, you know, that train took off the station. I mean, he went from like 200 to 120 in no time. He's been delivering even after his hot spring. He looks like the man, but it's just so funny, the two perspectives we can have on a new shiny toy like Stewart, as opposed to like, you know, old and decrepit Jordan Walker, who's like probably only 23 still.
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah, I mean, like last year, everyone was off George Springer, and he turned out to be one of the best buys of the year. Yeah, you know, sometimes it definitely helps to have a kind of a contrarian view at times, although sometimes it also can help you. And you mentioned Sal Stewart, and the guy I think of along with him was McLean on the Reds. Those were two of the biggest, I thought, helium guys in Vegas this past year, where they were shooting up 4 or 5 rounds by the time you got to the, you know, the second week of drafts in Vegas. And, you know, it seems like McLean is not going to pay off his inflated draft price, whereas Sal Stewart looks unbelievable so far. So I think, again, it comes down to the individual player and your analysis of that player. And maybe, you know, if you believe in that player, you ride the market with him. And if you have doubts, you jump off when there's a lot of helium.
Yeah. And one thing that you can do, and I know sometimes this backfires, but this is something I'm doing every year in my December article where I'm looking at late round values. Like, I'm looking at these power metrics, these power rates, and I'm getting off the qualified on Fangraphs. I'm going down to, like, you know, smaller samples, maybe guys that didn't quite qualify, but they're hitting the ball hard every year. And if they just have a year of good health, good things are probably going to happen because they are hitting the ball hard, because they're, you know, launching or whatnot. But like Matt Wallner always comes to mind. I know he stinks right now, not the best example, but he's always got some sort of injury. Lars Nootbaar for years has hit the ball hard. It really hasn't come to fruition. And we can use that to our advantage, like, you know, creating a little custom board, stat board for ourselves on Fangraphs, and just look at the last, you know, 20 days or something, 3 weeks rolling of, those metrics, barrel rate, hard hit rate, all that. And then, you know, compare that with the upcoming schedule, right? Like Jamai Jones, I'm seeing, is hitting the ball really hard. I understand it's a super small sample. He's a short side platoon guy, but what if the Tigers face six lefties next week? Like, maybe he's a sneaky, you know, pickup, and things like that. I picked up Cody Clemens this week because it looked like he was underperforming, but he was hitting the ball hard and they were going to face six righties this week. I knew he'd be in the lineup. So I think things like that are a huge advantage for us.
Yeah, I think that's a great approach. I think the only thing I would add to it is to look at the hard hit rate with the launch angle. Is really big. And you know, you're talking about hard hit rates. I could tell you, I'm pained to confess, I have two big teams with Fernando Tatis Jr. on it. And
Jorge Glitter, leader.
Yeah, he is like number one, I think, or recently was number one in all of Major League Baseball in terms of hard hit rate. I just pulled up his page now. It's like 65% hard hit rate. But then you look at the launch angle from 21, it was almost 14 degrees, 11 degrees in 23, 10 degrees in 24, 9.4 in 25. So it's declining, but still okay. And this year so far, it's 3.2 degrees, which explains why he has exactly zero home runs, despite an incredible hard hit rate. So you need the hard hit rate, but you also need the launch angle.
Yeah, yeah. Michael Harris II is another example of that because he's doubled all of his metrics on that front, but he's still, you know, his launch angle is still 7-8%. He still hit six balls out of the park, but you know, he's not going to hit 30 plus if unless he makes an adjustment. And then also, would you make an adjustment? Like, how do you make an adjustment? I'm not a pro in that respect. How do you make a slight adjustment in launch angle in your approach without affecting what's, you know, without breaking what you don't need to break that's working for you?
Yeah, good question. I'm not a hitting coach either, but I would think it's easier for guys who've done it before, you know, like, so Tatis, the last 3 years, 11%, 10%, 9.4, and now he's at 3.2. So it seems like he's probably modified his swing path unintentionally. And, you know, I don't know, I guess just looking at a lot of video from what he was doing the last 3 years and trying to get back to that. I mean, it seems clear, you know, his timing is strong. He is striking out a little more than he has been, but not egregiously so, but the major decline in launch angle makes me think that, you know, something with his swing path is off. And I guess I have more faith that someone like him who normally hits with a higher launch angle can get back to it than someone who historically has a very low launch angle would kind of have to more change what they've been doing for years and years to kind of change their approach. Not that it can't be done, but maybe it's a little tougher.
Yeah, and if you're in a trade league, you're frustrated with Tatis, you just got to hold fort, right? Unless you're getting some you know, wild off, great, amazing offer where someone is analytically inclined and understands that it's some adjustments need to be made and some bad luck, like he'll be fine. Unless you're going to get a good deal back, it's better just you just hold a guy like that. You don't want to sell low in that respect. Yeah. Let's end the show with a question. So FTN subscriber Randy, what do you like more for the rest of the season, Dalton rushing or Carter Jensen? Before the answer, I just want to say on behalf of all Dodger fans, I'm sorry for Dalton rushing. I know we get a bad rap, the Dodgers, and I think it's for a lot of the wrong reasons, but like, I think we have really good dudes. Like, people individually do not really hate Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, Shohei Ohtani. You know, like these are like, you know, for the most part, good humans from what we know, you know, family people in their 30s, they're veterans, right? And here comes this, you know, this crazy kid. He's gotten into more stuff over the last week than God knows who. And one, you know, and I'm almost siding with all the other sides. Like when I thought he said, about Amaya, that, I thought for a second, I convinced myself as a Dodger fan and I'm no lip reader that he said, I'm fast. He's fast AF. But then that doesn't make sense. He literally called him, fat F. Horner was there. He confirmed it. Nico Horner compared. So, and again, like, so he's now becoming kind of like the most hated player in the league and whatnot, at the same time, like crushing it, getting more opportunities. I also remember he's, you know, not defending him in the least, but like, that's a lot of baseball players. They're just, you know, a lot of them are, tool bags. They're young kids or they're, you know, they grew up with like, you know, just getting the great treatment and everything. And just not everyone is different, but all to say that, yeah, Dalton rushing is breaking is adding to the we hate the Dodgers factor.
So is your guilt assuaged? I know you Dodger fans, you got it rough. But I didn't think that was such a big deal. I mean, you know, compared to the trash talking that goes on in the NBA or on the line of scrimmage in football games, it's probably really very timid. Just it kind of made some news. Returning to the question, you give me equal playing time, I might take rushing, but I'll lean Carter Jensen. I think his path to playing time is more secure. When Freeman's healthy, Freeman's going to be playing first base. When Ohtani's healthy, he's at DH. And when Smith is healthy, he's going to be catching most games. And so, you know, rushing has put together some amazing stats with very limited playing time, but, you know, it's tough to hit like that when you're playing two games a week. And so I'll stick with Jensen.
Yeah, I'm with you the same. Everything about Carter Jensen looks great. He's been just as good as advertised. And it does come down to the playing time. If you had a Will Smith is out for the year type situation, knock on wood, then you've got a different story. But yeah,
I agree.
Anything else major to wrap up or kind of covered a lot there today?
Yeah, no, the only thing I'll say is, you know, it's as you alluded to earlier, you know, we're at an interesting time in the season where it's still very young, very early. You know, we have 5 months of baseball to go. A lot's going to change. Things that we can't even have expected are going to happen. And, you know, the stars of this season are unknown to us at this time. But we've definitely moved away from the small sample size. But what I find really interesting, other than, you know, in addition to fantasy, is just the standings are wild. You know, right now the Mets and Phillies have like the worst records in baseball and tied in last place. You got, the Astros in last place with the fewest amount of wins in the American League. You got the Red Sox in last place. It's, you know, the Athletics are currently in first place above the Mariners. You know, only recently did the Dodgers, you know, get back ahead of the Padres, who are right there with them. The Cincinnati Reds are leading the NL Central. And while their record's nothing great, the Miami Marlins are in second place. So just, you know, go figure. I mean, I think it's going to be a real fun baseball season. A lot's going to change. And maybe, you know, take a look at the standings and you realize, yeah, it's it's still early and there's still a lot of mobilization and regression to come.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's great for baseball. If we're 3.5 months down the line and you just have all these, you know, first of all, you have new blood. Teams that haven't been doing that well all of a sudden are in the mix. And just the races are closer. It just makes for just an all around better time. So hopefully they figure things out in the off season. Cause I don't even want to think about that now. I just want to enjoy the ride.
Let's enjoy the season to the fullest and then we'll cry and whatever.
So I think good takeaway from this week's episode is uncover some gems for the week, for the upcoming week. If you're looking to stream, you're looking for some power or speed, really dig in there, use the tools that are available to you. It's free for everybody. And be careful on the big spends. Be careful on the big spends. It takes out a big chunk of your budget. And pitchers are inherently, you know, it's all a matter of when, not if, for all of them.
Yeah, and I think it's now time to really dig into your teams and start addressing deficiencies. I mean, I think it's easy to write things off or not get too hung up on the standings the first couple of weeks. I don't. I pay very little attention to the standings. We're early in the season. I don't want it over influencing me and stuff, but we're beyond the small sample size now. So a lot's going to change, but if you've got deficiencies, now it's time to start getting serious.
Yeah. And along those lines, Mike does have a wonderful article, a great 3-step plan, very detailed on how to address those type of things early in the season, how to fix your fantasy teams. Essentially, you can find that at ftnfantasy.com. That's where you can find Mike and I, the rest of the team. If you haven't yet subscribed during the week, we'll help you set lineups. We've got amazing projections and we'll also help you on the weekend, figure out the best pickups and who to drop as well. So ftnfantasy.com. On behalf of Jason Anthony, the FTN team, for Mike Mager, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We'll talk to you next week.